Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. A ton to get to, including top five new holidays. I've come up with a list. Buffo Phil sent a good question, but more than anything else, we got to start here. Bob Mackowitz, do you now have a will?
Well, we've started. What I went to see Jeff last night. Why don't you just do the read quick, and then I can do my...
You mean... Oh, you know what? I think you should do the read, because you...
I don't know what to say.
You know, how was your experience at Jeff Paul?
It was good. It was good. Jeff's very thorough. He's a pleasant guy. You know, we had a nice time. I actually owe Jeff an apology.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Because, and by the way, if you wanted to call Jeff Pollock and give him an apology, 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088. Or you can contact him at jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. jeffpollock.com. Go with your apology.
So it was a couple things. Firstly, funny thing on the way over there, we were starving, my wife and I. Uh-oh. So we quickly jumped into Longo's to get like the pre-made sushi.
Yeah.
And somehow, like the way they had positioned the wasabi and the sushi was so that it was stuck to one of the pieces for both of us. So we didn't notice, and both of us put the entire glob of wasabi in our mouths at one time. And I was thinking in my mouth, wow, this is like really hot. And just so eventually tears are rolling down my face. And she did exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And we went into Jeff's office 5 minutes later. So he must have thought like, they're really upset about this because you're doing the will and you're talking about all these things. We have tears rolling down our face. We have to explain. No, it's just the wasabi.
Like, it was just the wasabi.
We're all business. Like there's no emotion whatsoever. It's
so you were coming
just
in
horseradish.
Hot. You were coming in hot.
Literally hot. So here's what I realized. Like Jeff's a friend and he's a good guy and he's doing this a solid. And so we're sitting there and I'm slouched. I'm slouched at the table and you can barely see me above. Like I'm like Bart Simpson in the back of the classroom. And I realize like I'm just not good with authority.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, Jeff's not authority. Yeah. He's a friend who's doing us a solid. But it doesn't matter. Because I'm in an office and there's leather bound books. And my instinct is just VP's office.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're just,
I've been sent out of class.
So at this point, Jeff was the man and you've got to rebel against the
100%. There's pictures of Winston Churchill around and the Queen and law degrees. And my instinct, and I realize now this must be baked in at a cellular level.
Yeah.
Is just to be a dick at the back of the class.
Yep. That's you.
Yeah, that is just me. And what did I listen to on the way there?
What?
Punk rock.
Of course.
A band called Gouge Away out of Florida. Really good.
Yeah, they're great live.
They're named after a Pixies song, so you might like
that. Nice.
You would actually hate the music. Maybe I'll play some later. Very good, though, if you like punk rock. I highly recommend it. Anyway, like I'm a grown man with a family.
Yeah.
I've run businesses. Yep. I've had jobs.
You've run businesses.
Yes.
You're a homeowner.
Yes.
You are something that every millennial strives to be.
Right. I was part of my parent council.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
I was a vice chair of the parent council, but it doesn't matter because as soon as I get around anybody with a job, my automatic reaction is you ain't the boss of me.
Yeah. That is true.
Flip you, man.
I think you like that also because it allows you to still have the best of both worlds because a lot of your trappings are the opposite of punk rock, but there's still a part of you inside that's punk rock, and you want to believe that side is a big part. So when you're there, you know, suddenly in front of the Monopoly man, you're like, screw you. You know, there ain't nothing wrong with the first two darker purple properties just because they're not worth a lot of money. Get out of here, Boardwalk.
You know, we got a bunch of questions about Mike Trout. Some were sent directly to me, and, you know, he signed the $430 million deal with the Angels.
Yep.
And somebody asked, do you think it's too much? Buffalo Phil did, actually. And my instinct was, well, no, it wasn't. I mean, it's an enormous sum. It seems crazy. I remember when guys like Robin Yount and Kirby Puckett were getting $3 million a year.
Yeah.
And people thought, this is insane, and the sport is broken.
Yep.
But my thought is always, look, like, why doesn't anybody ever ask, are the owners making too much at the gate?
Mm-hmm.
Are the owners, should we cap the owners' earnings?
Well, it's actually, to me, it's always a simple answer.
Where's the owner cap?
Well, there shouldn't be.
It's revenue sharing in a way. But
yeah, there shouldn't be a cap for owners. But it's because you don't see them every day. we don't have that same emotional tie-in. We bitch and complain about the price to go to a game or the price for parking or the price for a beer, but we don't directly tie that in with the name and face of an owner.
See, I think that's one thing, but yep. I also think there's a deeper, more kind of insidious thing.
What do you think?
Which is deep down, people don't believe that owners should have any restrictions. Mm-hmm. That if you're an employee, inherently you should have restrictions because you belong to somebody else. That somebody else should have free reign to do what they want and set the conditions for what you can do. Hmm. And you know me, this is just my way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting in times like Mike Trout gets all this money and nobody says, how can a sad sack organization like the Angels that have so completely underperformed over the last number of years, like how come they make so much money they can afford this? Shouldn't somebody take that money away from them?
Well, actually, it's because of a local TV deal that pays them $3 billion for 20 years.
Right.
That's where it first starts.
Because even though Anaheim isn't really LA,
yeah,
you know, it's still LA.
Yeah.
And it's still 10 million people in the basic area, and you're still in Southern California, which is one of the richest markets in the world. So, yeah. It's just, I wanted to talk a little bit about Mike Trout in this, but this is, so let's just set this. This is the Fugazi edition of Macko and Cause.
Sure. I love it. Also, but it's something unique with athletes. No one ever went to a Clash concert. No one ever went to a Pixies concert. Or how many people went and go, oh, this ticket's so expensive. Damn you, band on stage. No one goes watch Paul Blart 3, The Revenge of the Blart, and go, hey, Kevin James, I can't believe, let me look it up on Variety, you made $19 million to make this movie. We only do it with athletes. It's something, it's a very unique, odd, and often cases crippling, because you know, I think it takes away sometimes from our enjoyment of sports, but it's an odd relationship we have with sports. We're more focused on the athlete's salary than we are in any other facet of life.
In a cap world, the salary now has to become part of the focus of your anger.
Yes.
Because if someone makes a ton of dough, like Austin Matthews has looked really good lately.
Yeah.
But if he started to stink and he was making 11.5 or 11, whatever, 7.34, whatever it actually is.
Yeah.
Then you go, not only do you stink, but you've stopped us from getting two or three other good players.
Yeah, and that's
so
part of it.
Yeah. You're killing us, right? Yeah. So, yes, in a cap world, there is something to be said for bitching and complaining about salary.
Yes.
Which is a drag it and is. Another reason why the cap sucks.
It does suck.
It makes money matter more than it should.
I've said many times, I always wonder how much more would we enjoy sports if no one knew what anyone was making. It wasn't out there. All we knew is, oh, Mike Trout signed a contract, and it looks like he's going to be there for 10 more years, you know, or 13 more years. And that's all we knew.
You know, we used to say your best players need to be your best players. And it seems like the more likely modern redefinition is your richest players have to be your best players.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. That's really how we look at it.
And also we look at it, your most valuable player is the one who's underpaid.
So true.
That's your most
valuable. That's actually a great point. Yeah, that is a great point.
Kadri and Morgan Riley, we like them more because they're not making more, you know? So it's a very odd relationship that we have with money and with salary.
So maybe for next week, we'll do our top five Toronto MVPs. And it's not most valuable player, it's most valuable property.
Yeah.
Where literally it's the player that's making the least but delivers the most.
Well, shame on you, Bob. You're like an owner. You look at players as
like
property.
Well, that was the joke,
I look at
Matt.
Them
that
like human beings.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Hey, let's talk about the Leafs, because I got a question coming off of last night's Nashville game.
Yeah.
It's almost a big question.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they were boring last night.
Yep.
But they were also so excited afterwards that they played a structured game.
I hate that.
Like practically giddy.
I hate that.
Right. Okay, so is it and they did play a more structured game.
Good
and,
for you.
And they were harder on
good
the puck.
For you. You only allow two goals. One was an empty netter, so the third
one. Yeah,
let's
just call it in mostly regulation.
To a team that's 17th in goals scored. Hooray! I'm supposed to be happy? I'm supposed to have my expectations lowered because you didn't allow, you know, six goals? You didn't allow a bunch of losers like on the Senators to score six goals against you? So now my expectations got to be lowered?
Well, and with the exception of the Blackhawks, who are playing very hot lately, and they've got some young kids who are really delivering. But Philadelphia is porous defensively. Yep. Ottawa's terrible. Nashville has underperformed, which is weird because I thought by now they would have snapped out of it. You know, but they're bad on the power play. They're just bad in a variety of areas that they shouldn't be. Was it good last night that they came out and they put offense on hold and concentrated on defense? Now, this is a team that was giving up regularly 6 goals a night. Last night, they did not look like that team.
Nope.
Is that a good thing?
Here's
because they couldn't score.
Here's the boring answer. The boring answer is, ask me after tonight's game. Right. Ask me after the final 9 games. If what we saw last night translates into a nice, impressive run to end the year, then yes, it is. But why is it that the porridge is either cold or hot? Whatever happened to the porridge being the right temperature where you're still dangerous enough and you're not playing like a tire fire defensively? Why is it, we were better with structure, but we only had 6 shots in the first period. We only had 22 shots, leaves only 22 shots at Pekka Rene. I'm having a hard time here celebrating that because it feels like all our expectations are going lowered, and I don't want to have lowered expectations with this team.
Okay, so define what you mean by lowered expectations.
Here's
you mean in terms of success or in terms of entertainment value?
No, not entertainment. I'm talking about success. I'm talking about, and you're right, Bob, they were all giddy that they played with structure.
Tavares practically looked happy.
Yeah, they lost again. And, you know, catching Boston, that's over. We're done with that.
Freddie played well.
I'm not as concerned with Freddie as other people are. I'm concerned with everyone else on the ice first. The momentum from Chicago. We nearly came back to win that game. Oh, wait, we're down 5-2 late in the second to the Flyers. Where's that momentum? Hey, we beat the Flyers. And then what do you see in the first 6 minutes against Ottawa? Like, good for them for playing more structurally, but when you sacrifice all of your offense, it's hard for me to be excited.
It's not a perfect analogy, but I was thinking last night of when Randy Carlyle got fired and Peter Horacek took over.
Yeah.
And they started to play a very, very disciplined, slow down kind of game. And
yeah.
Under Carlyle, it was all just Phil Kessel, do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
The defense was terrible. And I remember someone at the time said to me, you watch how they play under Horacek. Everyone's going to say, oh, great, because the underlying numbers are going to revert to something that looks more balanced.
Yeah.
But they won't send 2 guys into the corner to try and retrieve a puck. It's basically they're going to play a modified version of dump and chase.
Yeah.
And just sit back, prevent defense.
They're
going to play prevent defense. They're going to be like Tampa 2 all night long. And I don't think we saw that last night. But it goes to your point, and it's a very good one, about hockey, which is there seems to be no happy middle. There's no place where the porridge is just right.
Mm-hmm.
You're either like a run-and-gun Pat Quinn 6-5 kind of team.
Yep.
And everything is like the 1987 Game 3 Summit Series between Canada and Russia, where it's just like last team with the puck wins.
Yep.
And or the opposite, where it's a 1-0 game and everybody's safe and the neutral zone is the DMZ.
Mm-hmm.
And the game has no spikes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was last night.
Low event.
It was a boring-ass game.
Low event.
Yeah, low event. I mean, there was one chance by Tavares. It's like, I went through, you know, just for the job, I could go through the game, and there was really only one time, you know, and Pekka Rennie made a great save, Tavares in the third, and that would have tied the game at 1. I don't know. Like, and Jeff O'Neill said, sometimes when you're about to go on a good winning streak, it starts with a game like that. That's fine. Except
yeah, when you're coming off a good win streak, you win games that you shouldn't.
Exactly. But the problem with that is it's not like the game before the Nashville game was the Ottawa game, which might have been the most embarrassing. No, it was the most embarrassing game of the season when you consider the quality of competition. So
I don't think that's fair.
Oh,
and I'll tell you why.
All right.
Because, of course, the quality of competition was lesser. They looked like an AHL squad. But they're all professional hockey players, and a lot of them are playing for gigs. And, of course, Like, it was more embarrassing, not because of the competition they were facing, but more because they themselves looked disorganized and disinterested.
When you put the talent of they are compared to Ottawa, where you had, you know, two, like one guy was on his seventh team in 4 years or fourth team in 7 years. And the guy who scored two goals for Ottawa, I can't even remember his name. Of course, I couldn't even pronounce it when I did know it. He hadn't in a double-digit goal-scoring season since 2010. They lost a journeyman and AHL players.
But they also lost to professional hockey players who were playing hard and enjoying the fact they were kicking the Leafs' ass.
That is true.
And the Leafs came in disorganized and I think distracted by their own recent slide.
Yeah.
And they let things get out of hand fast. So it was not a great result. It was a terrible result. I think in some ways we make too much of the Ottawa side of things and not enough of the Toronto let that happen.
Oh, and they did.
They did it to themselves.
Oh, yeah. I understand why Garrett Sparks was saying we need more emotion. First 6 minutes of that game. Anyway, we're focused on back on Saturday. Yeah, so the answer is, was that a good result? Ask me in a week.
See, it's... here's
I hate that answer, but it's...
I made the point a couple pods ago that they're going to go into the playoffs in the mushy playoff middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel like that should be the case because they started the season so hot.
They did.
And so we've learned a couple lessons, I think, from this. One is, whatever a team does between puck drop at the start of the year and about Christmas, relax. Because nobody's playing their hardest yet. It's really hard to get a gauge of how good a team is in November.
Yeah.
And the Leafs were racking up wins and they were scoring at will and they were incredibly fun. But as the games get tougher and tougher, you start to see more and more of what a squad's going to be really like to go up against. And the Leafs have shown that they're lacking. And that's not bad because they're a rebuilding club. Like, I know that we want them to be great because they got Tavares and everyone got excited about how they're going to win the cup this year.
Rightfully so.
No, not rightfully so.
Rightfully so.
Wrongfully so. Mm. Funfully so. Funfully so, but not rightfully so. So the reality check comes in when you start to get to March and you're playing teams that are fighting for playoff spots below you in the standings or trying to tune up because they want to go on a long run. Like, everybody's getting serious. The Leafs, in that context, are good, but not great. They're in the middle of the playoff hunt. They could win a round or two, but if they went all the way, there'd be upsets.
I think if they win a first round, that'll be an upset.
Against Boston, but that's mostly because of the playoff structure. Like, if they were going to play a team like Carolina or Columbus, if this was divided up where it was 1-8, they finished third and, you know, whatever. Like, if they played a team that was more like that, you'd go, we should win this.
Yeah, no,
it's the stupid playoff structure.
It is. And what do I do with this stat?
Okay.
The Leafs' record against, and they were talking about this on First Up, the Leafs' record against teams, the top eight defensive teams in the NHL. Now, ain't no one going to have an 800 winning percentage because those are great defensive teams.
They're good teams.
Yeah. So, but the Leafs aren't even 500. They're 4-14-1. So that's
That's not even close to 500.
That's not even close to 500.
That's getting the pile driver.
Yeah, if they were, say, had a 475 winning percentage against those teams, but then, you know, we're great against teams poorer than that, that's fine. That's, you know, that's hockey. But 4-14-1 against the top eight defensive teams. I don't know what to do with that stat, but it makes me sad.
Okay, hang on a second. Do you not know what to do with it, or you don't know what you don't want to do what you know what to do with it?
Yeah, door number two.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to yell and scream and just be really confused.
Right.
I want to
because they feel like they should be better because there's a lot of talent.
Yeah.
But man, to be really good in the parity in the league is such that you just can't get away with high end talent. You have to be good all the way through.
4-14
And they're not there yet.
Yeah, they're not. Well, and that's the thing is, do we have to view this year as part of, and you use that word, and people can't see this on the podcast, I just gave Bob a scornful look.
He did. He looked like he was smelling cauliflower.
Yeah. Oh, disgusting. Rebuild. Mm-hmm. I don't want to look at this as a rebuild.
This is the beginning of the end. Mm. You know, to what was Churchill's famous line? It's not the ending or the beginning, but it's the beginning of the end.
I think his famous line was, "My glass is empty." So let's do something.
The cigar ain't gonna light itself, gang.
Yeah, let's do something about this. It's 11 a.m. Why am I not drinking champagne?
You know, when you look back to the acquisitions that they made, the divestments were of course the first thing. Get the coach, get rid of all your players.
Yep.
Start again.
Yep.
Then through the draft, then you start picking up players. They're at a point now where they're ready to become a great team. Mm-hmm. They're not a great team. Mm-hmm. They're ready to become a great team. And they need to get their asses kicked in a little bit to show where the weaknesses are.
Well, they've had their asses kicked for the last week and a half. True. Like a good, solid, thorough ass kicking.
You know, I think in some ways.
They need a new colon. They've had their asses kicked so much.
Give them an enema.
Yeah. Oh.
I think what's lost in all of this is they haven't been that great in 2019.
No.
They're fine. They're a okay team in 2019. But the first part of the season was so successful. The overall numbers are going to land them.
They started out playing at a Tampa Bay pace.
Right.
Since Christmas, they've played at about the 17th best team in the NHL pace.
Right.
So when you put it together, it looks better. But holy Lord, it looks
It's a bit like a baseball player that had like an incredibly hot 6-week stretch.
Yeah.
And he winds up a 250 hitter, mm-hmm. but it's because he was hitting 333 for a stretch of 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. The amazing thing about the long season, as much of a drag as it is sometimes, is it eventually tells you the truth.
Yeah.
Right? Like you regress to where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You
know,
there are times when you stink and times when you're great, but like after a while, you are your record.
Yeah, yeah. The honesty that's coming out right now stinks. All right, let's move
okay,
on.
Okay, so speaking of honesty, because I do want to talk about this. Yeah. So last night, Babcock makes some weird comments that I don't even really know how to interpret about how...
He's been doing a bunch of them, Bob.
Yeah, we're playing... It's starting to be like, you know, they used to say like of Yasser Arafat, when he would speak, he would say some things in English and some things in Arabic.
Yeah.
And the messages would be slightly different for each audience. Mm-hmm. I feel like Babcock is now using the pulpit to send different messages to different people at different times. Part of it's for the team, part of it's for Dubas, part of it's for his ego in the media. He's complicated right now.
He's taken a couple shots at, you know, saying issues with the roster and saying, the other day he said that other teams deal better with their depth and we've got to do a better job building our depth.
Right.
Well, that's not his job. Building depth, that's the general manager's job. And the current general manager was in charge of the Marlies before this year. I hate to go full, you know, let's gin this up, but it feels pretty soap opera-ish what's going on.
I think we're on the cusp of soap opera-ish.
Yeah.
Like if it goes poorly in the first round, what I find interesting about this is, remember we talked about do the Leafs need to sell Mitch Marner?
Yep.
We talked about how weird it is that we applied no logical sports conventions to that situation. Let's talk about this. Was Babcock Dubas's hire? He was not.
No.
So in other words, a general manager takes over a team and he's got a coach that people see as underperforming and making questionable roster decisions and who's now taking shots at him in the media.
Yep.
Is he in trouble? Because the conventional wisdom would say this is cruising for a bruising.
Yes, the conventional wisdom would. And also, he's playing like, you know, when Dermott was healthy, Dermott was getting buried. And just, you know, Hainsey is playing too much. And Marlowe, hell, you load manage Marlowe if you want. But all these...
He looks tired. Let's let him play on the fourth line tonight.
Just give him a night off.
It'll never happen.
You know, though, it's funny about that. If the idea in sports is that you want to win and you're going to sacrifice, and sacrifice is sometimes I'm going to show up early, I'm going to stay late, I'm going to practice hard. That's sacrifice. Sacrifice can mean a lot of things. Like I'm going to take a couple games off so that I'm more refreshed. And thus when I am on the ice, I'll be better able to contribute as a positive member of this team. That's sacrifice. But there's also Marlowe's consecutive game streak. Huh. Throwing it out there.
Well, you know, I never loved Cal Ripken.
Yeah.
I when I used to do sports radio with Merrick and Strombolopoulos back on The Fan in the mid-90s, my first gig, we used to rip Cal Ripken all the time as a selfish player who was putting his streak above the interests of the team.
Everyone must have hated
you
for that.
They just hated it. They absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
We championed Albert Bell.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't always look better now in retrospect, but I can see why you did the time.
Well, you know, once I go back to the punk rock thing.
Yeah.
By the way, quick sidebar, great story from Fred Shiro, the legendary coach from the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, the Broad Street Bullies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he once said they were talking about making a contribution to the team in the dressing room, and he drew a picture of a breakfast plate on the chalkboard with eggs and bacon.
Yeah.
And he said, the chicken made a contribution. The pig made a commitment.
That's a great line.
Yeah, it's pretty good, eh? That's pretty good.
Oh, God. Shout out to the pig.
So the Dubas and Babcock thing I find is interesting because if the shot is, did the team do enough at the deadline to bolster their depth? Because Callie Rosen's hurt, and that's too bad because he would have been a guy they were ready to call up.
Yeah.
They've got Trevor Moore up, and he looks really good, actually. They went out and acquired Nick Batan, who may or may not work. He may not be the kind of player Babcock wanted, but they've got a guy for almost nothing that they could insert into the fourth line, and hopefully they get something out of him. I don't see the Batan gamble as any worse than Plekanec or Brian Boyle.
Nope.
And it cost you way less to
get him.
It cost
you way less. You don't have to give up a second rounder.
100%. So I look at that and I think, did Dubas screw that up? Not really. But he didn't go in for any... Oh, one side thing here. The idea that they didn't do anything at the deadline is bullshit.
Yeah.
Because they got Jake Muzzin.
Yeah. They just got him a couple days before the deadline.
Right.
Yeah.
So even that's stupid. So if Babcock's talking about he doesn't have the depth to work with, what the F is he actually talking about?
Yeah.
Because he's wrong.
Yeah. See, here's what I would like to do. You're absolutely right. With Babcock is I'd like to interview every other... Well, not John Cooper. You don't have to be a part of this. You don't have to be a part of this, John. You can sit this one out. We know the answer. But how many of the other coaches, and this is privately, never get released, would trade their roster for Babcock's roster?
Ooh, that's a great question.
So, and I bet the answer is a lot.
Yeah.
And if the answer is 80%, then maybe you shouldn't be talking about your depth and your roster.
I think what this really comes to, and this is the code that we go back to, is he keeps talking about depth, but what he really means by depth is a reservoir of players who are big.
Yeah.
And play veteran-style, disciplined hockey.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a run-and-gun team that's built around stretch passes.
Yeah.
And they love to make chaos and transition. By the way, I know we talk about this all the time, but can you really make enough of the fact that Gardner and Dermott are out of the lineup?
Yeah.
They get hemmed in their zone all the time, and two of your best defensemen at getting out of the zone are out of the lineup. Yep. What do you think's going to happen?
And then absolutely. And it always needs to be mentioned because it's in their area of weakness to begin the year. So when you lose more of them, it hurts that much more.
So I kind of feel like Babcock is way wrong here.
Yeah.
Like if they would have made moves in the spirit of what they'd done in the past, just to give the coach some kind of security blanket, all you're doing is carving your own assets up for very little gain.
Yeah.
Like, how many moves at the deadline really pay off? Wayne Simmonds scored his first goal as a Nashville Predator last night. 9 games in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's going to pay off in the playoffs. Maybe it's not. But historically, deadline moves don't do for you what you think they're going to do. And Dubas knows that.
Yeah.
He knows the deadline, like the free agency period. That's where you do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And after the draft.
Yeah, the Babcock post game presser has now become more interesting because we're now panning for the little shot at Dubas.
You need the Dick Tracy decoder ring,
as you try
to figure out, okay, who's he mad at tonight?
Ovaltine, drink more Ovaltine.
I always thought that was brilliant because Ovaltine is not delicious. Ovaltine's one of the great stealth foods, and if you're a millennial and you don't know what it is, Google it. But Matt and I grew up with it. It was basically like a health drink, but it looked like chocolate milk.
Yeah. Yeah. But it wasn't.
But it wasn't.
No.
It was kind of like oatmeal in a glass.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that reference is from A Christmas Story. I want to do my
You're the kid in Christmas Story, by the way.
Like
you're the Red Ryder BB gun kid.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're Ralphie.
Yeah,
you even look like Ralphie now.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Ralphie produces or is like, I don't know if he still is, but for a while he was in adult films.
What?
Yeah, either producing, but he
with his Red Ryder BB gun.
With his Red Ryder BB gun, he careful, he'll shoot your eye out.
Yeah, bam.
Oh, yes,
you did not.
Sexual reference.
Oh golly. I can't believe the way that lined up.
It just lined up perfectly. All right. Top 5 holidays. That's it for a moment.
Okay.
Onwards and upwards.
I'm sorry. Oh, man. I feel like Jimmy Fallon on SNL right
now. Except you're more talented and disciplined. You threw out the idea, and I think it's because you were away last week.
I was.
For top five. Like, we need five. No, new holidays.
New holidays.
You know, top five holidays. I have come up with five new dates for five new holidays for Canadians.
So it was actually motivated by St. Patrick's Day because I heard a number of people to say it's a holiday.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, it's not everybody goes to work and then you just work and drinking where you can. Mm-hmm. Maybe it should be a holiday.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what got me thinking. Five holidays that we need.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do this from five to one. And number five, it's the only one I don't have something specific for. But we have May 2-4. We got there's a day off you get in June, a July, you know, like you have these long weekends in May, June, July. Why don't we have one in August? It's ridiculous. So it's called the TIPA, the TBA. We'll find a weekend, probably mid-August, so it's, you know, not too close to Labor Day. But an August, it just needs to be an August long
Let's come weekend. Up with a better name than TIPA, because you're onto something here.
Yeah.
What would be an August theme?
You know, like
the wasp harvest.
The what?
Or the wasp harvest, where you just like take a week and you run around and you like raid wasps.
Yeah, fine. Great. The wasp won't like it, but everyone else will. So that's number five. Number four, the specific date will be sometime in late April. It has to be a Friday. And it's the Friday after whatever the big like superhero blockbuster movie is. So it's summer blockbuster night holiday.
Marvel Day.
What's that?
We'll call it Marvel Day.
Marvel Day. Exactly. And it's basically, there's always in April now that big release, and it's Thursday night. Oh, see the midnight show on Thursday.
So this year would be Endgame Day.
Yeah, exactly. This year.
It's a great idea, man.
Yeah. So that's number four. Number three, this one's obvious. July 28th, Terry Fox's birthday. Easy.
Yep.
Great. Everyone's going to get behind it. It's like, you know, this is like when you go on Twitter and say, we need to end child hunger. Everyone agrees. Sort of like this one here. Who say no to Terry Fox's birthday? July 28th, it's off. Number two, the day after the Super Bowl. And this one is simple. The Monday after, first off, the Super Bowl, you know, it's early, the end of January, early February. Who wants to go to work on that Monday? And you got cleaning, you're full, whatever you are, day after the Super Bowl.
I have a better one. Mm. Let's put a pin in it and come back to that, okay? I don't want to bust your flow, but I want to build on that idea.
All right. And number one, I'm going to sneeze now.
Okay. Bless you.
I'm an aggressive sneezer. Number one, October 20th. This one is also so easy. Not only is it Tommy Douglas's birthday, it's Nellie McClung's birthday as well. So, you know, you got the person with socialized medicine, the woman that helped make it possible for women to vote in Canada, and they both share the same birthday, October 20th.
Okay, do they celebrate that in, like, Alberta, or does the Ford government celebrate the private or the public medicine option?
Well, you know, eventually Ford will be out. You know, we swing left, we swing right.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's like, who's going to say no to that? October 20th.
No, it's
and
you nice. Can,
you can
I
spend
nice that.
That time searching for your Halloween costume for your children. So October 20th, the number one. So those are my 5 days.
Can we call it What Actually Makes Canada a Good Day?
Yeah, What Actually Makes Canada a Good Day, October 20th.
Okay, so even though it's not a funny option, Remembrance Day should be a holiday.
Damn right.
It's ridiculous that it isn't.
It used to be, it's not anymore.
Okay, now I want to put a pin back into this idea of the Super Bowl, because not everybody eats and drinks at the Super Bowl the way you think.
Yep.
Right? Like you guys do.
Yeah.
But you're uncommon.
Yeah.
Most people just go to a party, have some food. Like, it's not so different than your average sports night. What I think we need is January 2nd and arguably even January 3rd, because there's a lot of penance you need to do after that run. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to have a couple days after, like, just to sort of, we could even call it like broth day.
Yeah.
You know, just so you can go back to work feeling a little more right.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if one day really covers it. Like, what happens if, like, January 2nd, you got to work?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody feels tired and run down.
Bloated. And
like, shouldn't we start the new year with a break?
Start the new year's for the right. Yeah, that's not a bad one.
We could call it gym day.
Yeah.
Leg day.
Leg.
Everybody's got to go to the gym and do legs.
Legs or cardio. Yeah.
And all gyms are free that day. Mm. You know how like they have the TTC?
Yeah, the TTC.
That's free like on
St. Patty's Day or New Year's Eve. Yeah.
Right. So all gyms are free.
Yeah.
On January 2nd.
And if you go, you don't have to bring the red bag. If you go, what gym is it that?
Good Life.
Good Life. Yeah, you don't even have to bring the
red
bag.
Saw one on the streetcar today.
Of course you did. So
it's not a very good looking bag though. No. Like, it's a bit flimsy.
It's also creepy. You know, it's like everyone must bring red bag to gym. Like, yeah.
It feels so kind of on the nose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Good Life. I should take a Good Life bag.
Mm-hmm. You know what my bag, my gym bag? I rarely ever go to a gym just because I'd rather run outside. We got a gym in this building. I just take a grocery bag. Just take a grocery bag, throw in, you know, throw my clothes
really?
In there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't think you should. I used to, instead of a knapsack in high school, I used to walk around in Loblaws bags.
Yeah.
I put all my books in Loblaws bags. I also wore two different shoes, though.
Yeah. Got to talk to your parents. The only bad thing, the kid, and I did you have this in your school? The kid who brought a briefcase.
Like, oh, yeah.
That kid.
His name is Akash Maharaj, and now he's running some kind of international foreign diplomacy
group. I'm sure he's wildly successful.
So smart.
But
nice guy, too.
Those years when you bring the briefcase, maybe not anymore, because there's, you know, they're still bullying.
You know,
but you would get taunted.
He had giant hair. He made my hair kind of look tame.
Yeah.
He made me look like Kirk Cameron.
Mm.
He had this wild hair, and he always walked around in a trench coat and a briefcase.
Yeah, that kid would scare me.
He was so smart, though. Of course. Nice kid, too.
We had a briefcase kid as well, and, you know, he got...
He was in the 95 club. You know those kids at school, like, they didn't just do well, but they got 95 and over?
Yeah. They just seemed like wizards to me. Like, how right. did you do well, that?
Like, what species do you belong to?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There was this one kid, Scott Straker. Man, he was super smart. He's a professor of medieval literature now, I think, at Queens.
That's nice a money kid. Maker.
I was in a band with him for a little while.
Really?
Yeah, we were the Compulsive Liars.
That was the name of your band?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Punk?
A little. Yeah. Anyway, I remember he would show up and he was obsessed with Robert Smith and The Cure. So he'd had white makeup on his face and his hair would be teased up like he had like wood glue combing it up. And his head would be on the table. I'm pretty sure he had a half a bottle of wine before he showed up. And we were in French class and he was like a grade ahead. So he was in my, like, he was a grade behind. He was in my French class because he was so smart. And his head would be down. The teacher would ask him a question. He wouldn't even lift his head and he would just answer the question correctly.
The teacher must have hated him so much.
He was a really nice guy, though. He was a great guy. I remember looking at him and thinking, okay, now that's smart.
Yeah.
That guy is smart.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm here studying and I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I got a couple questions for you.
Yep.
Bing, bang, boom. And sure. I do want to talk about the Jays. So how long do we have?
Oh, no. We got 20 minutes.
I need your reaction to this, Matt. I think I'm going to pose this as an ethical question. It isn't really one. Okay. I just want your reaction.
All right.
Okay. So I was at the mall the other day.
Yeah.
And I was washing my hands and some guy was in the stall and the phone rings. And all of a sudden I hear, hello? Yeah? I'm in the washroom right now.
Oh.
What? And the conversation proceeds.
Yeah.
How wrong is it to be in the washroom stall at the mall and answer your phone?
It's horrible.
And what's worse, to do it or to say where you are?
To say where you are is worse. If you're going to answer the phone, I already think you're a war criminal. Let's just start there. But to then tell the other person, because now you've invited, like, the other person didn't know, but now you've invited the other person into your bathroom world.
You haven't even invited them. You've kind of...
Yeah, you haven't invited them.
You've kidnapped them.
You've dragged them into your bathroom world. Telling is even worse. It's horrible and all.
The guy seemed really comfortable about it.
Yeah, though. That's it. Why are you comfortable? Like, the bathroom, you go in, you get out. That's it.
Now, is it wrong to be on the phone in the bathroom at your home? Because nobody knows what you're doing. And if you don't say anything, like, you're in your home, they'll never know.
Yeah, it's less wrong. You just don't...
Is it sort of wrong?
Yeah, it's sort of wrong.
I don't think so.
Mm.
Because the other person will never know. It's like, is it wrong to be naked when you're on the phone?
No.
Well, what's the difference?
We're naked right now. let me turn this around because we all agree that the talking on the phone in public bathroom is horrible.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on the person who brushes their teeth
in the public bathroom?
Like, and let's go like at it. Yeah, at a public bathroom, because I see it at work every now and then. someone in the bathroom is brushing
totally fine with it.
See, I'm not. Like, totally I think it's just like, get out.
Yeah, but
get
first
out.
Of all, in terms of hygiene, you should brush after every meal. That's what the dentists tell us. And if you're at work and you're supposed to brush after every meal, as per the dentist's recommendation, mm-hmm. where are you supposed to do it? Like you put a portable up?
Bob, I
was it like a leper colony? You got to go to the back of the parking lot to brush your teeth?
No, you're an adult man. You wait till you get home. I've been in a cavity in 30 years.
Okay, but is brushing your teeth gross?
It's in the bathroom with other people going, you know, pooing. Okay,
yeah, but like,
I'm sorry.
How is it different than washing your hands?
Because washing your hands doesn't take as long, and you're not. And the thing is, you know, there's other people's poopo, fecal, and there's your toothbrush, which you're about to insert your mouth. And
yeah,
you
but you don't like take the toothbrush and like scrub the floors with it.
I
you're not in the
that.
Army.
I understand.
You
that.
Take it out of a container. You brush your teeth. You put it back in the container.
The public bathroom is Mission Impossible, and guess what? That stall's going to explode in 5 seconds. So you want to wash your hands and get out before that explosion. I hate hearing other people's noises. I hate being around that environment. It is about go properly wash your hands and then get the hell out.
Yeah, Matt, you get a little bit Orwellian when it comes to the bathroom.
You're damn right I
right?
do.
Like, so I think that...
If you want me to back off for this, it's not going to...
Yeah,
go
I, no, I know. But I also kind of want you to recognize that your position is extreme. You're kind of a bathroom extremist.
You're damn right I am. I'm a bathroom hero. Right.
You know how you like to fancy yourself, and I put that in quotation marks,
yep.
a centrist?
Yep.
You know, oh, I just like common sense.
Yes.
Which is another way of people saying I have my prejudices, but yeah. I like to pretend they're always right.
All right.
So I recast them as common sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like your bathroom demeanor mm-hmm. or philosophies.
Yep.
Nothing centrist about it.
No.
You're obsessive.
Oh, oh no, yes.
You're like, you're a Freudian casebook.
Yep. Okay, well, let me just throw this back at you. Imagine a world where everyone who uses a public bathroom, mm-hmm. A, doesn't go number two, mm-hmm. B, you know, washes their hands,
mm-hmm.
but also C, you know what I also do, Bob? When I'm, you know, I got a paper towel and I see that there's like a lot of water on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
I give it a wipe before I throw in the garbage.
Who are you, Mary Poppins?
In fact, I'm not done. When there is sometimes paper towel left on the ground, I'll take paper towel and some clean stuff and use it and pick up other people have discarded on the ground and put it in the garbage. Because when I walked in the bathroom and I saw that garbage there, that made me upset. So okay. I wanted to make sure the next person wasn't upset. You know what I am, Bob? You can call me whatever you want. You can call me an extremist. But how dare you not call me a goddamn bathroom hero?
Ironically, though, like most heroes, you hate your subject. You're not doing it out of the warmth of your heart. You're doing it out of fear and anger and spite.
I leave that bathroom cleaner than what I...
Don't give me the I get results bullshit.
I leave
because
that
how many historical atrocities have been committed by extremists who say, I have an ideological position and I hold to it, and anybody who doesn't, well, they get the consequences.
Nothing. That's never led
that's
to anything
never led
bad
to anything
in the
bad,
history
Matt.
Of
exactly.
planet Earth.
Eventually, when this country is overrun by bathroom terrorists, we're going to know, they're going to have a picture of you at their meetings.
Yes, and I'm going to be proud of that. Because much like when a new recruit goes in the Army, and what they tell that new recruit, you return this rifle cleaner than how we
you are the head of the alt toilet movement.
Yes, I leave that bathroom cleaner than where I than
you
when
get results.
I get results, and also I don't make it smelly.
Right,
bathroom hero,
bathroom purity.
That's right.
Bathrooms for original bathroom owners.
That's right. I don't know what you're talking about, but I believe you're agreeing with me. I don't know how we get. Oh yeah, brushing your teeth, gross.
Right. So sorry, there's nothing gross about brushing your teeth. You're totally wrong on this one.
Do you want
totally
to get,
wrong.
You want to get to the Buffalo Phil question before we get to one of yours?
No, I want to do something a little sporty here.
All right,
because I've been thinking about Mike Trout.
Yep,
and I just jotted this down. In hockey, there's a couple players you would definitely pay to see. You'd pay to see Connor McDavid. You'd probably pay to see Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner do their thing.
Yep,
like there are some teams that got guys and Patrick Kane. You'd pay to see.
Mm-hmm.
Football, there's plenty because the quarterback, receiver, whatever. Basketball, probably the most.
Yep,
right. Is there one baseball player that you would pay to see?
No.
It's weird, isn't it?
Now,
like Mike Trout's a great player. He might wind up being one of the five greatest players who ever lived.
Yeah.
Would you put money on the table to watch him play?
I've never gone, honey, shut up. Mike Trout's at bat. Everyone in the room, be quiet.
Right.
I need to watch this at bat. He just worked another ball. It's two and one. It's two balls and a strike. It's a hitter's count. Everyone,
look
shut
at his
up.
Plate discipline.
Yeah, exactly. No, maybe like Justin Verlander. Probably still a lot of the big, like the real starting pitchers.
I came to the same conclusion because the position players don't get a lot of action.
Yeah,
four times up.
Maybe five.
Maybe five. Maybe a couple balls hit to them in the field. Yep. Like you might see something, you might not. I would pay to see Steven Strasburg back in the day.
Yeah.
Kershaw, Scherzer.
Yeah.
You know, players like pitchers like that, I would probably just, because they can dominate a game. And here's what's ironic about this. Their job is to make the game less interesting.
Yep.
Oh, so the only players that you would pay to see are the ones who take the offense out of the game.
Yeah.
What other sport can you say that about?
None. Baseball's so weird when it comes to their their relationship with offense. Because think about this. You know, they try to do these, they're doing these rule changes, you know, fewer trips to the mound and all these things. Why? They want to shorten the game. It's too long. Okay. So step one, we got to shorten the game. But we like offense. Offense in baseball makes the game go on longer. So how do you marry those two things of let's make the game quicker, but we want more runs? That's a very hard thing to try to compromise.
I think that's why baseball is a game for intellectuals, because at its core, everything is a puzzle.
Yeah.
It's a giant puzzle. By the way, we bought a puzzle. We had it up north during my vacation.
Ooh, what was the puzzle?
It was a 500-piece Star Wars puzzle. And we gave up.
It's
one of the saddest moments in the world
when you go,
the puzzle has beat me.
Oh.
For 2 days, we sat there. We got about a third of it done. And
you're
just like, I give up.
That's why they made puzzles for when you're at the cottage.
I have to laugh now. It's like, is that one of the, like, more than track pads?
Yeah.
Like, is giving up on the puzzle one of the signs of defeat?
And the thing is, it was a Star Wars puzzle. What was, by the way, what was the final thing? What did it have to be?
Oh, it was sort of like, there was like a mosaic of the different, of the six films.
Okay, okay.
And and then Vader in front. There's too many pieces, like, because it was Vader and his cloak is black. There were too many pieces that were just black.
Here's the thing. There's the puzzles for the sadists out there.
Yeah.
Where
like just, those 2,500 piece ones.
And it's just purple. It's just the color purple. And I see those puzzles. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing this? But yours had Darth Vader and you gave up on it.
So gave up.
That is a horrible message you've sent to
Cece. It really is. We taught her to be a loser.
Next time she's like, I don't want to do my homework. But then we never did that puzzle. You know, you're going to be in trouble there.
Do you want to, I got a quick question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to list all the things I've got.
Yeah.
I got some Game of Thrones questions.
Yeah.
I have got some Raptors observations.
Yep.
Jay's in Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got something else here. Oh, it's my phone.
Of course it's your phone. It's when the levee breaks.
That's my thing.
That is your thing.
And also some Captain Marvel observations, because I went to go see it.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. Let's start there. What, like, because I think we can save Game of Thrones, because we still have a little
bit. Can you hang on a second?
Oh, yeah,
can you do a read? I got to take this.
Of course I can do a read. Absolutely. You know, one of the partners here for us is Seat Giant. And you should use these guys because, A, they're our Canadian partner for this show. But your concert tickets, sporting event tickets, everything and anything in North America, just go to seatgiant.ca. And the best part is everything is in Canadian dollars. So it's not like, you know, when you go to Ticketmaster, you're like, wow, these tickets are so cheap. Oh, wait a minute. Now I've got to, you know, add an extra $30 because it's in American dough. You're not going to get that. Also, go to the discount code Bob and Matt. Use that discount code at checkout. You will save a percentage of the ticket, so you're going to save money. And then we get a small little portion back as well, which is great because the podcast is not free. It takes a little bit of money to put it up. So we get a little money. You save a little money. You get to work with a great Canadian partner, seatgiant.ca. So Bob's on the phone. We got a question from Buffalo Phil. If you were forced to choose one, which would it be? Go back to dial-up internet or having no TV remote and having to get up to change the channel? I think if you're younger, you're going to vote for no TV remote because you don't care. You know, you do all your viewing online and all that kind of stuff. But for me, I'm going to go to the dial-up internet. One, my computer takes a couple minutes to get started anyway. I don't have, you know, some one of them fancy MacBooks or whatever it is you kids are doing with your Apple. So I don't mind the dial-up internet. I don't mind the fact that it'll take a couple extra minutes. But I still watch TV. I still have a cable package. So because of that, there's no way I'm getting up to change the channel, because when I'm watching sports and they go to commercial, unless it's on TSN, then I buy all the goods and services. Have you seen the new seasons coming up on CTV's great shows? I'm going to change the channel because I don't want to watch commercials. So I choose dial-up internet. I need my remote control.
All right. So how long do we have? Because I think I'm going to have to jump off this pod soon and do a call.
Oh, okay. We got like 8 minutes.
Okay. So let's blast through a couple topics here.
Do it.
Okay. First of all, Garrett Sparks plays tonight.
Yeah.
If he plays bad, how much shame does he get? Is it like Cersei walking through the town square naked where everybody's going to pelt him with tomatoes and yell shame?
It absolutely, because the code in hockey, backup goaltender, even if the message is right, they're not allowed to be the messenger.
See, it's interesting because under Randy Carlyle, James Reimer sort of talked about how the team needed to play more structured.
Yeah.
And everybody knew it was true.
Yeah.
And he was like saying the emperor has no clothes, and we kind of applauded him for it, even though technically he's the backup goalie.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure this is a rule. I feel like this is circumstantial.
I don't know. All the ex-hockey players were saying that you're not allowed to.
I agree, but
I don't.
But we in the media and well, I'm not in the media anymore. But we who are observers and fans of the game, we kind of like it.
Yes,
don't we? If we think they're saying something that's true, and somebody, I know it's like the punter doing it on a football team.
Yeah, no, this is more important than the punter. I was fine with it, but yeah, if he plays poorly tonight, yeah, there's going to be shame going on.
So the Raptors. Here's what I realized. So we didn't get a chance to talk about it because I was up north. But Dwayne Casey beats the Raptors again.
Yep.
And then of course they reverse course and they destroy the Knicks last night because the Knicks stink.
Yeah.
But here's what I realized is I want the Raptors to go 77-5 every year. That's my perfect season. Mm-hmm. Like a perfect season for me would not be 82-0.
Yeah.
It'd be 77-5 and they lose twice to San Antonio and three times to Detroit.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And you know the worst part is, you know who Detroit lost to their next game? Cleveland. They lost to the Cavs, but they beat the Raptors. All three of those games were super close. Toronto could have won any of those.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, quickly, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Who's most likely to die of the Starks?
Okay.
Jon Snow, Bran, Sansa, and Arya. No, I'll put it better. Who's most likely to live? Jon Snow, Bran, Sansa, Arya.
Bran. Bran's the most, I think Bran's most likely to live.
Interesting observation.
Because what is he, the crow, whatever. It's been so long, man. When that show goes back on, I'm going to forget everyone's name. But yeah, I'm going to go with Bran. Who do you got?
I actually got Bran.
Okay, so we both got Bran.
With
yeah.
possibly Arya, because people like her so much. And I think they might do a little bit like Mad Men's last season, or like the last episode, where you kind of wrap it up and make people happy with storylines.
Which is fine. Make me happy. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I'm not smart. Okay, the Lannisters.
Yeah.
Cersei, Jaime, Tyrion.
We all know Cersei's dying, which is a shame. I'm rooting for her to be on the Iron Throne at the end.
Best wine drinker of all.
Oh, God, I'm rooting for her so much.
The Dick Cheney of Westeros.
Oh, yeah, totally.
She's so good. Three dragons. Not who's most likely to die.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be more?
Will there be more dragons?
Remember, Cersei was gifted the eggs
by
somebody who nobody, like to your point, who the hell knows who the character was. But she received them as a wedding gift when she married Khal Drogo.
Ooh.
Will there be more dragon eggs?
Not
out
Cersei.
There? Daenerys.
Daenerys. Yeah.
They got to defeat the White Walkers.
Yep.
The nuclear option is the dragons.
Yep.
Will there be more?
You know what? I think there could be. I think in the final episode, maybe it ends with just all the humans are happy and then all these dragons come and just eat everybody.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Game of chomps.
Yeah. Hey, Captain Marvel. You were mentioning.
Okay, yeah. Final thing, because I'm going to have to get going here.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel. You know what? It's not a great movie, but here's what I found interesting. I went and saw it with my daughter.
Yeah.
Who loved it. She's 9 years old. She talked afterwards openly, used words like that, inspired me.
Yeah.
You know, she said at one point, that's me up there when I'm an adult with fire powers.
Yeah.
To everybody who said the action sequences aren't directed as well as they could be, or maybe it's a little slow off the beginning, you know, you can make that point.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought was so interesting were the people who didn't like it on principle, because Captain Marvel was made with the intention of kids like my daughter
loving
it.
Yeah.
And it's funny how people get really territorial. It's like, but Marvel movies are for me. I'm the one who's supposed to like this. Me. Oh, so it was cut and directed and acted and conceived so an audience that maybe isn't you might like it.
Yeah.
No, what happened to me?
Yeah, I know. It's one of the dumbest things that small group of people, they get. You can criticize a movie on its merit, but oh, it's not how it's supposed to be, or oh, with a woman, boo. That's just stupid.
You know, it is stupid, but what it also speaks to is the possibility of, it almost reminds me of, you know, there's Punjabi Night in Canada?
Yeah.
And it's great. I actually love it. Mm-hmm. I watch it sometimes just because I enjoy the energy of the guys. I don't know what they're saying, but I get a kick out of it.
Yeah. Right?
And I think the future of sports is going to be like these really specialized broadcasts of a bigger property, because there's everything microcasts and narrowed down. And so if you have a huge Mandarin speaking group, we're just doing Mandarin.
Yeah.
If you think it's going to make, like, there's going to be really specific tailored feeds of things. And maybe comic book movies are going to move in that direction. Like, I know they're going to be super blockbusters always.
It's going to be a holiday.
It's exactly on Marvel Day.
Yeah.
But maybe there'll be smaller, more niche projects, more and more and more, that are just designed to satisfy smaller and more niche groups.
Huh. I don't know if I like that.
I think I do.
Because
comics work that way. Like, yeah, not every comic is designed to appeal to everybody.
But then won't there be a huge group of movies that you won't enjoy?
I think they'll have to be smaller properties. I think they're going to be like TV shows.
Yeah.
And you know.
No, that's fair. There's so much you can't even.
And there's so much digital content
out
there.
There's so much you can't consume everything.
Right.
You know,
like, it's hard enough to keep up with all the blockbusters.
Yeah, it's true. Because my initial instinct is I want to enjoy everything. But then I'm like, well, at some point I have to sleep.
And if there's like 6 or 7 blockbusters a year, like, you forget about it. But it's actually a fair amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
To keep going, like, you want to go see it in IMAX and it's $25 a ticket.
Yeah.
And then you get your popcorn and your parking and such and such. And next thing you know, every time you go to a movie, it's like $75.
I'm going to end with this thought, Bob.
Yeah.
When was the last time you had to worry about parking?
Well, just because I don't drive doesn't mean I don't pay for it.
I know. I'm ending on a snark note. Yes. Bye, Bob.
So boring.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.